an old oven, then this is what they recommend. First of all, yutzan. Okay? Let the oven cool. Tzinon, Hebrew, means cold. You want to say, you know, yeshli tzina, I got a cold. Anim tzinon, I have a cold, you know, so I'm cold, right, okay? Alright, so, the oven has to be cold. And then, after it's cold, often bo es hapas, if you baked the bread in it, asur ba'ano, the bread is prohibited. The bread is prohibited. This is opinion. Even though, in other words, you let the oven cool, what are you permitted? You don't have to do what? You don't have to break the oven. Because the fire this time did not do anything in order to improve the stove, to improve the oven itself. You understand? So, you don't have to break it, you just let it cool down. But what happens if you bake bread in it? I would say that it makes more sense to assume that you bake the bread while the oven was still hot. You understand? So in that case, what do they say? So they say, in that particular case, you have to throw it away. It's no good. It's also ripe. Surabhadon. Now, what happened, however, this Arba Bacherim, and what happens if this piece of bread, which was prohibited because of the fact that it was still baked while it was hot, and it's mixed in with other breads, presumably they were also there in the same oven at the time, right? So what is the answer? The answer is Kulan Asuros Bahanor. Then all the other breads are prohibited from having, you know, any enjoyment from it. You can't make any use of them. They have to be destroyed. Okay? So far, the picture is quite clear. The saving grace was only, you know, that you didn't have to destroy the old oven, but the bread. And incidentally, to come back to your question, there are certain things that even though they are mixed in and the prohibited thing is in the minority and the permissible thing is in the majority, nevertheless, the prohibition against all of them exists. Of course, it depends upon what the particular situation is. That's why kashrus is not that easy a field. You really have to put in a lot of work and understanding all the niceties of the law and everything else, and so that doesn't go that easy. Okay, so there's certain things we say. I mean, that I feel the elephant bottle. In other words, even if you had 1,000 times the quantity, but nevertheless, the prohibited thing is not, considered as nullified, neutralized, but instead everything is in that particular batch is considered trade. So that's why with Zevazet Goreim, that's a very nice principle, but the question is where can you apply it to say that, you know, Zevazet Goreim, that it's permissible, which eventually we're going to discover is Rabbi Yossi's real opinion. Okay. It's not easy. Not easy. So at any rate, so far this is the opinion, and since you know we don't have the authority who is mentioned by name, so we have to assume that this is the opinion of rabbis who felt this way. Okay. Rabbi Eliezer Oymer, he has a somewhat different opinion. What to do? He says, Yerlich Hanor Liyam Hamelach. Which means, right, take, right, whatever you benefited from, you know, the Asherah, take that and throw it into the Dead Sea. In other words, you can't get any use of that itself, but what would be the opinion otherwise? One opinion, one interpretation over here, that the, you know, the interpretation of Rashi is that what you do, you could, according to Rabbi Eliezer, you could take the value of that prohibited substance, what it would sell for in the market, you understand? And that you throw away into the Yam HaMelech, and that way you redeem the thing that, you know, is permissible, you understand? So you have to take its monetary value and just throw it into the Dead Sea. Because when
and
it says throw into the Dead Sea,
money, actual money?
The monetary value, not of the money. Yeah, the money itself,
the money itself
that you got,
so
right?
If the pocket was bad, was worth 10 shekels.
Right.
You had to throw
10 shekels. The
in
10 shekels,
it,
so, all right.
Redeem that pot, you could eat it.
Yes, the 10 shekels then would be considered like redeeming the other thing. You understand? It's what they call pidyon.
And then you could eat it.
Right. You could eat it then under those. That's according to the way we interpret Rabbi Eliezer. Remember, nobody doesn't necessarily mean that the others agree with him.
Right.
I mean, the Talmud we know, they're going to present all kinds of conflicting views, you know, okay? So, and so, up or low, yes, pardon me, yeah. Yeah, but you're not going to use it anymore. Presumably all the minerals will eventually destroy whatever it is. Well, that's a good question.
Someone found that money floating there.
Yeah.
They wouldn't know what it was. They could take it and use it.
I guess, because that money is now Hefker. And Hefker means
fine money in
right,
the Red Sea.
Right. Right.
Alone,
right.
Don't
Hefker, of course, the idea of Hefker is that, you know, it's free for all for everybody. The first one who can take it is welcome to it, and so on. Okay. Yeah. So far, okay, we understand Rabbi Eliezer now. So Omer lo, so what do Chachamim say to him? They say to him, Ein pidyon avedas kechavim. No, you cannot redeem what is idolatry. So in other words, I don't have to tell you, it means then that it's no good.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's trying to get around it.
All right. All right.
Yeah.
So, Rabbanan the Pligiali Rabbi Yezer Maninu. So now we want to know, who are the authorities who are in disagreement with Rabbi Eliezer? So, Ilaymor, if we say, Rabbanan, the Eitzim, that we're talking about the rabbis on this business that we had with the wood just now. So, Achmur, Machmur, then they are more Machmur than Rabbi Eliezer is in this particular case, because remember, they said that, you know, the stove has to be broken, right? And you baked something in there, and the medium is no good, and so on and so forth. So, they're more Machmur even than Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. So, we want to show that maybe Rabbi Yezer is more Mako, you know, he's taking a lighter interpretation than the other. So they say, El Rabbonin Nisa'or. So we come back to the idea, maybe it's the rabbis who said Nisa'or. In other words, the leavening, if you remember, right, that we said that if there isn't enough quantity in each of the, you know, both the prohibited substance and the permitted substance to cause chibutz, to cause leavening, then in that case, they said that would be okay, right? The fact that we have Abaye's opinion says, yeah, but if you pull it out first, that's what Abaye said, but that's not what they said, you see. So we have to distinguish between what did they say, what did Abaye say, what did Rabbi Eliezer say,
and who
so
the
on.
They are.
Right.
You have to know who the they are.
Right.
Different,
right.
Different,
so,
different
that's correct. That's yeah. correct. So in other words, we see, says Rabbanan, we were thinking it's all the Rabbanan. No. There are those, in one case A or B or something like that, they're machmir, in case another case, they're mekel. So the question is, which opinion do we follow? Okay. So they say, Eimer the Shabbat Lod, Rabbanan the Mekile. They said, or, okay, let us assume, they said, that you are willing to follow the opinion of the rabbis who, in the case of the Seor, in the case of the Truma, versus non-Truma, if you remember, right, that they're Mekel. In other words, they said, that as long as there isn't enough quantity in either of them in order to cause the leavening, then, it would be permitted, right? So they're Mekel over there. In other words, they follow the easier opinion, right? But Ba'avedes Kechavim Mekilei. But you want to tell me that the same thing is true when it comes to Avodah Zarah, to idolatry? In other words, in one case, they could afford to be more lenient because it's not a Torah principle necessarily that's involved. It's a rabbinic interpretation. So if it's a rabbinic interpretation, the rabbis may want to follow a more lenient opinion. You understand? But in the case of Avodah Zarah, which obviously so abhorred by the Torah, read in the Torah, v'lo yidbach b'yotcha be'ubo min acherim, you're not allowed to have anything cling in your hand from the prohibited idolatrous substance. So, are they going to be lenient over there? Elo liyoylom, but we come to the following opinion. Okay, all right, let's get back to the argument between Rabbi Yossi and the rabbis. And you know what? Rabbi Yossi, the Divrehim, the Rabbonon. So he says, in reality, Rabbi Yossi is arguing the argument of the rabbis. Omalahu, he said to the rabbis, the Didi Zevese Goreim Mutar. In my opinion, he says that if you have this question of Zev is Egorim, in other words, the prohibited and the permitted together, then on the basis of the fact that the permitted has to be considered, so we say that it's mutar to use it, right? Okay. But Ledidhu, as far as your opinion is concerned, the Amitu Zev is Egorim Asur, you hold, on the other hand, that Zev is Egorim is prohibited. Orderly Mihas, at least agree with me that Afyurokes, that vegetables be base, Hagashomim, in the winter time, when it rains over there, right? Agree with me that it should be permitted in that particular case. What was the permission that we gave at that time? What we said is that the vegetables were planted in mud, in soil, right? So even though there was, it was underneath an asherah, and we stressed the other week that the asherah forms like an ohel, like a tent, like a canopy, whatever it is, to cover, and therefore what comes underneath is tummy, okay? But nevertheless, that's only one factor. The other factor is the soil, and we say that, the soil never becomes tummy, okay? So soil doesn't become tummy, and the vegetables grow from the soil. So, in that case, we say it's permissible, right? That was the Chachamim who said that, not Rabbi Yossi. Right. This particular case, as we saw, Rabbi Yossi really was more bakel than the rabbis. For Rabbanan, as far as the rabbis are concerned, Kidomo Rav Mori Berei the Rav Kado. They follow an opinion in agreement with Mori, the son of Rav Kada, Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, who said that Rav Yehuda said the name of Shmuel, says Halacha Rabbi Yossi. Halacha follows Taka Rabbi Yossi. So in other words, in this particular case, you can be Makel.
Is this possibly right. a case where economy has something to do with it, that perhaps the fruits or whatever was grown there was important for people to eat, and they needed it or whatever, so they took a more lenient view?
I won't say it isn't a possibility. It's not the argument that's given, right? But the matter, that point of view is not usually discussed. There are those who have taken, I don't want to call it a Marxian interpretation, but many years ago it was quite popular. They said that, for example, Rabbi Eliezer represented the country people, and he was more conservative, and therefore he would prohibit things that were permitted by the rabbis who represented more the city people, and so on. And, there's a conflict between the values of city people as opposed to those of the country, and so on. But the funny thing is, I have to tell you, Louis Ginsberg, excuse me, one moment. Louis Ginsberg, a great Talmud expert and longtime professor at the Jewish Theological Seminary, this was a point of view that he wrote. So one time I was walking with him, and the question came up. He says, I've got a lot of shtus once upon a time. A lot of shtus. Yes.
I just want to ask you, when it says that the halacha is according to Rabbi Yossi, are we now talking about his idea of the tibyan, avodah kohanim? Is that what they're talking about?
No, we're talking about to begin with the whole business about the vegetables. This is where Rabbi Yossi
is.
Right, the vegetables, right, exactly. That's what started off the whole thing, that particular Mishnah. But, they want to bring in other examples, too, to find out, was he Mekel, was he Machmir, what was he, so and so forth. Okay. And if in one case he was Mekel, in another one he was Machmir, then what were the circumstances under which he was Mekel, the circumstances under which he was Machmir? And of course you can see that one of the factors that enters into the calculation is, all right, granted, as I said, a few moments ago, in the case of something which is, let's say, a question whether it's permitted or prohibited by the rabbis, but it's as a result of the rabbinic points of view. But in the case of Avodah Zorah, which is much stricter, so there, the tendency would be to interpret more, Machmir rather than Mekel. That's a point.
Yes. Is it possible that Asher negatively affects the fruit?
I don't know. I mean, a tree is a tree. There's no question about it. Fruits are much with the fruit itself. We learn that the fruit of the Asher itself is prohibited because that is part of it. So even if it falls on the ground, you can't, because that's really part of it. So. But the question of the vegetables. The vegetables were not part of the tree. The vegetables were part of the soil, and only the fact that the tree overhung it. So the question is, how would it affect them in this case? Shall we say, that it's strafe because it's right underneath or not? And the question then, coming back to the Mishnah, is that if, why is it prohibited in the in the sunny season? In other words, the spring, the summer, and so on, okay? It's prohibited because the sun actually is benefiting it. But in the rainy season, the overhang, you don't have that much sunlight, and the overhang prevents it, so that therefore this is why he said, it wouldn't be so, it would not be affected But as I said, the Chachamim disagree with him on that point. They said no.
You said something about the sun.
Yeah.
I'm not quite getting that. If the sun, had nothing to do with that,
the
plant, you need the sun.
Yes, but of course you need the sun. But in the winter time, in the rainy season, at that particular point, there isn't that much sunshine. So under those circumstances, there's more of a chance, for example, being that the vegetables are not going to grow well or anything like that. So that therefore, this is why he feels that. But then when they said, yeah, but what about, they have to take into account the leaves that fall over it. So are they good for the vegetables growing underneath it or not? And we say, yeah, they would benefit it. And that's why there's an opinion that says that even in the winter season, that these vegetables are prohibited.
But they go by Eliezer, who has
the more lenient. Well, Rabbi Eliezer is entering that particular one, but they're trying to find parallels in other cases. Yes. That's what points up. All right. So then we have another story over here. Ahu Ginso. There was a certain garden. There is Dabel, the Zivlod of Inisko, which was fertilized by the fertilizer of Avidazov. As we said before, I mean, why do they say even if you take an idol and break it up and make it into dust, but that dust can form also fertilizer, then you're not allowed to have hador from it. Okay. So here it was, the fertilizer was fertilizer from Avidazov. So Sholach Rav Avram Kamed Rav Yosef. So Rav Avram sent the following question to Rav Yosef and Omalei Hochi. He said to him as follows. He says, Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Shmuel. And the answer that he got back is that Rav Yehuda said to him, Shmuel, that halacha ka Rabbi Yosef. And therefore what? So even though the fertilizer was Vaveda Zara, but what grew in the garden is okay because of what principle? Zevus Agori. That the soil itself is not Avodah Zarah, and therefore he permitted it. And shows a reinforcement that Rabbi Yossi view prevails in that particular case. Okay, we'll go a little bit further tonight. Next slide.
Did you just say that he wrote to me?
Yeah, well, he inquired. Right. Exactly, right.
Have they reported the responses?
Yes.
The early responses?
Right. Okay. Yeah, here we are. Most decent. Okay. What the mem tells? Omid Bey is right down. Okay. A little bit more.
Is it possible to follow a rabbi who's more lenient, or if they come to a conclusion about who you have to follow?
Yeah. Got a good question that you raised. What is it? Was it Rush Limbaugh who was going around shopping for doctors who will give him drugs or something like that, if you remember, right? You know, at least he was accused of that. Okay. Are we permitted to go shopping for a particular rabbi who we know will always take the more lenient point of view and not go to a rabbi who may give, you know, the chumrah, right? We'll take the severe point of view about it and say that it's not for them. The question already is also raised in connection with Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel.
Yeah.
Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. It says that if you follow Beis Shammai, who in general had the reputation of being more machmer, you know, right? So you follow him, both with its chumras and its kulas. Okay, in other words, in certain cases, Beis Shammai actually has a more lenient opinion than Beis Hillel. Okay, but you have to be consistent, and the same thing is true. If you follow Beis Hillel, you have to accept them both where they are more lenient, and also, you know, where they are stricter. So it would be wrong to, as I say, go shopping only for rabbis who have lenient opinions. Okay? You have to accept both, the good and the bad, and, you know, what you're not happy with and what you're happy with. Okay? And sometimes the rabbi has to say, no, it's not permitted. So.
You're right about
Shammah
being more lenient.
Right.
Didn't he say that chicken with arms or something like that?
No. I think you're thinking about Rabbi Yossi Haglili. Not to say Rabbi Yossi, that we were talking about over here. A different one, okay? Rabbi Yossi Haglili never said that chicken is parah.
I don't know what it is.
But he said that chicken is not meat.
Yeah.
That's what he said. Okay. Whereas the Chachamim say that chicken is meat because it's warm-blooded.
Yeah.
So, right, that's correct.
So
right. According to Rabbi Yossi, if you followed his, Rabbi Yossi Haglili, not this Rabbi Yossi, okay, Rabbi Yossi Haglili, if you followed his opinion, then in that particular case, you would be permitted to eat chicken with milk.
Wow.
Yeah, but we don't follow that. The halacha does not follow Rabbi Yossi Haglili, okay. So, even though there is a minority point of view, it doesn't mean that we necessarily accept the minority point of view. Right? I assume it's something that tastes good, but I have no idea what it is. Right. All right. We'll start the new Mishnah, and then we'll continue next week. As you can see, we are coming to the end of the third chapter. Okay, right. But we'll do this Mishnah tonight on the top of the page. Okay. We're still talking, of course, about Ein HaSheva. Notice that the last few Mishnahs dealt specifically with HaShevas. All right. So, Notam Mimina Eitzim Asurin Behano. Okay. What if he took wood from the HaSheva, right? So they are prohibited to have any benefit whatever. Now, incidentally, now the next couple of lines is a repeat already of what we had cited before, but actually this is the Mokor, this is the source, and the citation came from here. You know, the Gemara, they can go ahead, they can go backwards and so on, right? Did I get you?
No, when we turn the page to the Hebrew,
we're
on the other side.
Oh, I see. Okay, good. Glad I have just enough. Canaan horror. Okay. So, all right. So he took wood from the Asherah, right? Then the wood is prohibited for any enjoyment, whatever, any use, whatever. Hisik lehed is hatador. I mean, this is what we had on the other side before. And if he uses the daughter to heat up the oven, right? So we said, im chadosh, if it's a brand new oven, yutkatz. The oven has to be broken to pieces. The yim yoshon, but if it's an old oven, then yutzad is, you know, let it cool off, right? Now, offer by his hapas, but if, however, you bake the piece of bread in the oven while it is still hot, right? Atzur b'ado, not allowed to have any use whatever out of it. Nis'ar b'acheros, and if it got mixed in with other loaves of bread also that were baked over there, then kulan asur b'ado, they're all of them are prohibited for any use whatever. Rabbi Eliezer, however, came up with the opinion of Meir, right, that one, Yerech Hador, Liyam HaMelech, that, as we explained before, if, for example, you redeem, you know, the thing that you want to use with money, then what did we say? You take the money and throw it into the Yam HaMelech, but then you can use it. So the sages said to him, Ein Pidyon L'Avid Iskei Chavim. No, you cannot redeem. In other words, by getting money for it, you're not allowed to do that. If it's idolatry. Now, Notal Heimena Karkor. All right. If he took like a chip from this tree, okay? Also Ba'anor, it's prohibited. I have to give a different translation of Karkor. Karkor, really over here, is like a piece of wood that you take, and then they use it in spinning. Since I'm not a right, something like that. They use it for that purpose, okay? All right. Right, okay. So, in other words, you've taken this, but you're no longer using it for firewood, which is would be, let's say, a primary purpose of wood, okay? But instead of using it for something else. So what happens then if Oragba is habegit? If you wove a garment with this implement, whatever, spindle, whatever you want to call it. So it's also Bahanor. You're not allowed to make any use, whatever, of that, what you've woven, either. Nisoreh ba'achirim, and what if that piece of the garment, you know, got mixed in with others? Ba'achirim, ba'achirim, and others with others, even stricter than what we had before. Kulon asur v'hador, right? They're all prohibited for any use, whatever. But Rabbi Eliezer, what does he say? Yerli chador liyam hamel, the same thing that we had before, namely what? Redeem it for its monetary value and then throw the money away. Okay? So Amulo, and they said to him, Ein pidyon l'avid eskei chavim. No, you cannot redeem anything that smacks of idolatry. All right, so we'll stop at this particular point with the new Mishnah. Yes.
Let us assume
yes.
that the woman in the household is doing a spindle.
Right.
And there's a piece of wood, you know, that was laying there. She didn't know that her kid brought it in, that he found it by the idol or whatever, and it was there, and she took it by without realizing what she was doing. Did the rabbis in any way...
Would they be more lenient?
But would that be, if she didn't
maybe under those circumstances, they would, that's a good question.
Under what circumstances would somebody use that piece of wood knowing that he had to throw away the garment?
Right. If people are aware where it comes from,
why would they even
they wouldn't use it, period, right.
So
that's exactly what they're trying to do, you see, to do...
Right. I guess they're trying to make sure that you know what the problem is and you won't use it.
Right,
so
right.
So it's like a deterrent rather than a correction.
Yeah, that's correct, right. But whether, as we would say, you know, we've had many cases already where we say, lechatchila, to begin with, you don't do it, period. But the evidence, if you happen to do it, then the question is it mutar, is it usur, right?
Yeah.
Is it under those circumstances? Well, that would be up to the rabbi to have to judge what the circumstances are, right? Yeah.
I'll never forget when in my mother's house.
With questions, I wasn't getting
okay,
it. I was
right.
To figure it out.
All right, tonight is already the 30th of August of the year 2006. So yeah, we're moving along. Oy, oy, oy. And we finished last week the Mishnah on the top of Mem Tes Amud Beis and Avodah Zarah. So now we'll continue with the Gemara. Gemara says immediately, Utsricho. Tzricho, as you can see, what does tzarich mean? You need it. So the question is, what are we talking about that you need? So the answer is, why do we have two different cases mentioned in the Mishnah when they seem to be so similar to each other. What is the first case? You take a look, the first case dealt with using wood that was taken from the Asherah, right? And what did we see? We saw that there was a difference of opinion between Rabbi Eliezer and between the Chachamim. Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that you can redeem it, you know, take this piece of wood, whatever it is, sell it for geld. Of course, he was actually talking about the tadur, about the using wood inside an oven in order to bake bread. Remember, this was the problem, okay? And at that time, good evening, Bob. Come on in. I hope you had dinner.
I got caught up and then I have to order the grape seed
Okay. All right. So, the first case that, as we said, he took a piece of wood from an Asherah, and what did he do with it? He used it in order to heat the oven, right? And then there was a question, first of all, about the oven itself, and secondly, about the bread that was baked in the oven. Okay? So, in the case of the oven itself, we said that we make a distinction between an old oven, where the fire doesn't really affect it too much, because it's already been hardened and put to use, right? As compared to a new oven which has first been used for the first time, but we said that in that case the oven itself is also, because heating it is what hardens it so that it's able to serve as an oven. Because remember, how did they make the oven? As we said, they took pieces of clay and they built up an oven that way. Okay, it was effective, it worked. Okay. What about the bread? So we said that as you bake bread over there, then what? Not only is it prohibited, but if by some reason, for some time, you know, it happened to get mixed in with other breads, then in that particular case, they're all prohibited. Okay. So that was case number one. Now, parallel to it is, of course, the one that you heard just a moment ago, namely, that what about taking a piece of wood from the Asherah, right, and using it in order to make this the spindle, whatever it is that you want to call it, you know, that is used in weaving. So as we see in that particular case, again, not only is the spindle prohibited, but the garment that you make with it, if it happens to be mixed in with others, then in that case they're all prohibited. And this is the rabbi's opinion in both cases. Mixed in, they're all no good. Whereas, what did Rabbi Eliezer say in the second case? He said the same thing. In other words, redeem it, right? Take the money, throw it into the Yam HaMelech, wherever you're going to throw it, right? And in that particular case, then you can use the garment itself. As long as you forego the hanor, you know, in other words, the monetary hanor, you forego. Okay? So that's fine. So the question is, since the two stories look alike, why do we need it? That's what Tzericha always wants to know. Why do we need two? We could have learned only one example and figure out the rest in case they had a similar case. So, they continue by saying, let's say we had only the first case mentioned, right? Then we might argue as such, that in this particular case, why did Rabbi Eliezer say that, you know, you can redeem that piece of bread, let's say, right? By, you know, taking the money and throwing it and throwing it into Yam HaMelech. He says, because Mishum Deba'idah Dekagomra Pas Koli Lo Yesuri. He says, the reason being that, you know, this is the argument you might have advanced, right? That at the moment, at the time that the bread was finished baking, then the piece of wood that was also already was burnt. It was there, it's no longer there. So, therefore, we might say, you know, that Maybe Rabbi Yezer says that in that particular case you can redeem it, because by then the bread is no longer getting any hanor from the piece of wood that was burning in the oven, right? You get the picture, okay?
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It burns up quickly, the little piece.
Right. Amol karkor, however, in the case of the spindle, the isei liyisura b'yene, where it still is existing in its original form, and it's prohibited because we said it came from the Asherah, right? So, Eimer Meidel Rabbanim, that we might argue that Rabbi Eliezer would agree with the rabbis, namely what? That the garment is to be thrown away, right? It's prohibited, right? Since the spindle is still there. So, the Iyashminin, let's take the case, the second case, right? Let's say that we learned only the second case, namely about the karkar, you know, the spindle, right? And this, we would say, Behor Ka'amir Rabbanan, in this particular case, the rabbis say that the garment is prohibited, right? Abol pas, but maybe in the case of the bread, Eimer Modele Rabbi Eliezer. We might argue that they agree with Rabbi Eliezer that, all right, look, and then the bread is finished, the wood was long burnt or something like that, so they might agree with his point of view, right? And say that it's okay. So Tzricho, that's the reason why we have two different stories, because we want to show that they are in disagreement both in case one and also in case two, and each one, you know, has their particular reasons for feeling that way. So Rabbi Chiya, the Rei, the Rabbo, Bar Nachmani. So Rabbi Chiya, the son of Rabbo, the son of Nachmani, Omar Rav Chista said the name Rav Chista, he said Omar Zairi, who said it in the name of Zairi. We notice, I mean, that we want to make sure that we give full credit to whoever is the person, you know, who made the original statement and who quoted him and who quoted them, etc., etc. Right, maybe Gula Eilov, exactly. It's a Gemara that we learned both in Megillah and also in Perek, right. So it says, Omar Li Abba Bar Rav Chista. Says Abba, the son of Rav Chista, said to me, "Hochi Amaziri." This is what Zahiri said, that halacha is Kerabi Eliezer. Halacha follows Taka Rabbi Eliezer. In other words, we follow the lenient opinion that was expressed by Rabbi Eliezer, namely that you can redeem it for the money and then throw the money away.
I think the second one was with the dresses. They also can be redeemed.
Yes. That's according to Rabbi Eliezer, not according to the rabbis, but according to Rabbi Eliezer. Right, correct. Omer Avoda Barahava. So Avoda Barahava said, "Lei shanu elapas." So he says, you know, his tradition was that it was so only in the case of the bread. Right, Avol Chovis lo. But we would say that a barrel of wine, this is not so. What does it mean, a barrel of wine? In other words, you had several barrels of wine, right? One of them contained Goyish wine. Yain Nesach. I mean, don't forget, they didn't have it bottled the way we have with a Hechsher on it or anything like that. So you had to rely upon the fact that, you know, that the Jewish wine was in a cask, produced by Jews, and the other one had been used for some reason or other for Avodah Zarah, right? It was Yei Nesach, okay. So he says, so what applies to the bread does not apply to wine. Rav Chista Amar, but Rav Chista said, Afilu Chovis Buteris, that even a barrel of Yei Nesach, under those circumstances, it got mixed in, of course, we're talking about. We don't know which barrel was which. I mean, remember, if you could definitely separate the prohibited from the, right, if they had done so, then in that particular case, you know, there wouldn't be a problem. You remove it before there's any possibility of mixing. But it wasn't done. they did get mixed in. You didn't remember which barrel was in that particular case. All right, so Rav Chista says, even on those circumstances, even the barrel of Yei Nesach is also permitted when you don't know it apart, you know, from the elders. But what? Permitted? Obviously permitted in what sense? It's permitted, but you have to do something, namely, you sell a bottle, you sell a cask of wine or whatever it may be, and you take the money, and you're going to throw it away. You understand? That's how it's permitted.
By redeeming it,
right. This is the whole point over here. It's about the redeeming it. At least this is the point of view of Rabbi Eliezer.
Right. So.
Right.
But
you're
going to
drink it?
You're not going to drink it. You're going to throw the wine away, or you sell it.
No. You sell one of the. You don't remember which barrel contains the Yei Nesach as compared to the others. You understand? You sell any one barrel, redeem it for geld, and then take that geld and you throw it away.
You throw away the geld?
Yeah.
Right.
So you don't have, yeah, no, that's right. Pardon me?
The rest of it's okay.
Yeah, the rest of it's okay. That's correct.
So
can
right.
I do that with a ham sandwich?
You know what I don't understand about this?
Throw it away.
Why?
Don't sell it. Throw it away.
That's for one barrel. Now what about...
A cask of wine instead of with the money.
Instead of going through the selling.
Exactly. Okay. The answer is that if the cask of wine is thrown into the river, somebody's going to pick it up and drink it, not knowing that it's Yei Nesach.
Okay.
Or at least that it might possibly be Yei Nesach.
They threw the whole cask in.
Yeah, they threw the whole cask.
Why don't they just pour the wine out? Why can't they pour it out?
Well, there's nothing over there. There's nothing there. But nevertheless, right.
Somebody's
right.
Going to be drinking wine that's not kosher.
They don't know if it is.
I know.
They don't identify.
But under those circumstances, we have to say that it becomes bottled because of the fact that it has been redeemed. So it's no longer in its original status. That's what we have to say. This is Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, that's all. Right. 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 Right.
Act of redemption.
Right.
Sort of washes clean the slate.
Correct.
So that's really the answer there.
Right. So we get back again a little
bit. But they put an extra thing on it that you shouldn't get.
You shouldn't get any hador, right. You should not get any hador. By hador we mean any benefit whatever out of it.
Right.
So
all
it's
right.
The benefit that you're throwing away.
So
right.
The loss that
right.
Way.
Right.
interesting, okay.
Right.
But the act of redemption was important. Now I understand
right.
That.
Right. So now this little shtick Gemara concludes by saying, Hahu Gavra, there's a certain man, he says, this Arev Lechavisa de Yei Nesach Bechomre, where a barrel or a cask of Yei Nesach, you know, that's the prohibited wine, right, was mixed in with his own wine. In other words, mixed in that, you know, he couldn't remember, you know, which was which, okay? It's exactly the case that we're just talking about. So also the Kavid Rav Chista, they came for Rav Chista. Omar, so what did Rav Chista say to him? He said to him, he says, Shkol al bezuzi, he says, you know what? Take out four zuzi, v'shadi b'nara, and throw it into the river. Okay, don't forget, in Babylonia, they didn't have the Yam HaMelech over there, but they had lots of rivers over there. So he says, take these four zuzi, throw it into the river, finish tarilok, and then it becomes permitted unto you. So we see from this that even though we might argue that the Chachamim have a better argument than being more logical, but nevertheless, in this particular case, Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, where he's more lenient, was accepted as being the halacha. So now we have another Mishnah, with which the third chapter ends, and this is Ketzad Mevatlon. How can you be mevatel? In other words, how can you nullify the asherah, right? Now who? A Jew? Well, we learned a long time ago, can a Jew nullify an idol? The answer is no. Who is the only one who can nullify it? A goy. An idolater. He's the one who has the power to nullify his idol. Okay? So,
what do you mean by nullify?
To nullify means that you say, I have no more use for this, so that it loses its status
as
an idol. That's what we mean by nullify. Right.
You cannot do this because we have fewer Jews.
Can't do that, no. Right, exactly. The Goy has the authority to do it. Because
the Jew doesn't
that's
recognize
his, right.
it as an idol in the first place.
No. He knows it's an idol. But you mean he doesn't believe in it. That's the worthy different story. Right, exactly. Okay. So, how can he do it? So, Kirsaim Zirid, let's say he did a little shaving, cutting around, pruning, if you wish, right? Not on the men of Makiel or Shavit, or if he takes a stick from it, or he makes a rod out of it. So, Afilo Ola, even if he takes only a leaf away from it. Sareze Bitlo. In that case, we say this is already an act that shows that he nullified this idol, that no longer has any religious significance unto him. Shipalatzocho, what if he shaved the tree, right? For its own benefit. In other words, you prune it or whatever you do with it in order to make the tree grow better, right? Keep it healthier, grow better. So that's the so-called for its benefit. And then in that particular case, what? Asura. It's prohibited. But shalom, that's so-called, but of course, prohibited to a Jew we're talking about, okay? Of course, in other words, it still retains its status as an idol. If anything, it's more beautiful. It's more healthy right now, this tree, okay? But, shalom etzorcho, but if it's not for the sake of making it more beautiful or improving the tree and so on, in other words, just that he chops away at it for whatever reason it may be, the muteros, in that particular case, it has lost its status of being an idol, and the tree becomes permitted for a Jew to do what?
Yeah,
to rest underneath, to get fruit from it, whatever it may be, and so on. Right.
Right.
They very often will quote a Mishnah, and then we finally come to the original source. What happened with the first part of the Mishnah at the top of the page 2? That they had already brought it in connection with an argument previously.
Right.
So, right. But this is actually the source of the citation. Right. All right. So, Gemara wants to know. Oysen shafayin matei alehen. Now, we said that the last part said if he shaved it for its benefit, right, it's prohibited, but if it's not for its benefit, then in that case, permitted. So they want to know. Yeah. All right, so look, you shaved it. So these shavings, matei alehen, right, what should you do with them? So pligi barav huna, rabki bar rav. Okay, according to, yes, okay, so there is a difference of opinion between Rav Huna and between Rav Chiya bar Rav concerning what to do with these things that were chipped away. Chad Omar Asurin, v'chad Omar Mutorin. One says that they are prohibited since they came from the idol tree, right, from the Asherah. And the other one says, these chips, a Jew can take them, do whatever you want with them. Now, Tanya, we have learned, Commander Omar Mutorin, in accordance with the one who said that they are permitted, the Tanya, as we learned in the Baraisa, that Oved Kechovim, a goy, Sheshipa Avedis Kechovim, if he shaved, you know, this idol, meaning the tree in this particular case, the Tzorcho, for his own benefit, he Yushfoher Mutoran, then both the idol and its chips are now permitted, because the idol is no longer an idol, because he took away something from it, you understand? And the chips also are now permitted. That's one opinion, okay? Right, for his own benefit. I think I skipped a line before. All right, let me repeat it again. What did they quote? The Tanya, they quoted that Oyved Kechov, a goy. I see that my eye jumped ahead. Sheshipa Avedis Kechovim Litzorcho. In other words, he shaved it for his own benefit. Understand? He wanted it to make some use from it, then he Ushfaher Buton, right. So it, the tree, and also those things, right, are permitted, whereas the Tzorcho, but if it is for the benefit of the idol tree, the Asherah itself, right, then in that case, he asuro, she is prohibited, the tree is prohibited, which for her with her, but the chips may be permitted. The Yisrael sheship. Now, what happens if, on the other hand, the Yisrael sheshipa v'yiskechovim, what if a Jew takes this Asherah to begin with? It's still an Asherah, right? And he does some shaving, you know, figuring he'll get some wood out of it, right? So it says, Bein l'sorcha, whether it is in order to make the Asherah more beautiful, more fruitful, whatever it may be, or Bein l'sorcha, or whether for his own use, he, Ushvaheha, Asur, the tree, and also the chips are all prohibited. So a goy can get some benefit, right? But a Jew cannot get benefits from it. Itmar, we've learned another case, that Avedas Kechovim, how about an idol this time, okay, Shadishtabra, which broke down. Rav Omar, so Rav says, Zorech Levatel Kol Kesem Mekesem. Rav says, you have to be Mevatel, you have to nullify each and every chip taken from this idol, right? Shmuel Omar, but Shmuel says, Avedas Kechovim Eino Betelo Eladerek Dilasa, that an idol can only be nullified when it is in the way in which it normally grows. So obviously there's a difference of opinion between Rav and Shmuel. Rav saying, Tzorech Levatel Kol Kesem Mekesem, right? And Shmuel said that it has to grow, if it's the way it normally grows, then in that case you cannot nullify it, but presumably if it's not in its normal way, then in that particular case it should be permitted, right? So they say, Adrabah. No, on the contrary, he says, Berach Kedelusso Mimivatla. What are you telling me? When it's growing in its normal fashion, who is going to nullify it? Elohochikoma, but this, what he really wanted to say is, Ein avidas kechovim tzricha levatel, that an idol does not have to be nullified, eloderek dilasa, only when it's growing in its normal fashion. So, lema, we just say, behor kamiflege, that the argument consists about this. Demar sovar, one of the authorities is of the opinion that oivdin nishvorit, that an idolater will worship even broken pieces from an idol. Of course, that will apply also to an asherah as well. But he would worship broken pieces. Even still contains, it still retains sanctity as far as he's concerned. That's according to one of the sages. Umar, and on the other hand, the other authority, obviously this would be the difference of Rav and Shmuel, says Ein Oivdin Lishvorit, right? They do not worship, you know, broken parts, only the whole thing. So, is that what the argument is? So he says, "Lo, no, that's not so. That's not the argument." The Chulei Alma, because everybody is in agreement that Oivdin Lishvorit, that an idolater continues to worship even broken parts. So the Hacha, in this case, what is the argument then? It's B'shivrei Shivorim Kamiflege. The argument would be about tiny pieces, broken parts of broken parts. First it gets broken into parts, and then what happens? So you take these parts and you break them further. Excuse me. Mar Sovar, one of them is the opinion that Shivrei Shivorim Asurin, that even so, the broken parts of broken parts are prohibited. Mar Sovar and the other authority feels that Shivrei Shivorim Mutar, that broken parts already from already broken parts are permissible. The Yiboy Seibo, and if you wish, you might argue as follows. The Chulei Alma, everybody is in agreement that Shivrei Shvorim Mutarim, that the broken pieces of broken pieces are permitted. The Hacha, but here we are talking about something else. We're talking about Bavedes Kechavim. We're talking about an idol, Shel Kulios, made of different parts that are put together. We're talking about an ordinary person, Sheyochel Lahachzira, who is able to put all the parts together and reconstruct the idol. Komiflegate. This is what the argument is. Mar Sovar, one authority believes, gave in the head Yochel Lahachzira Le Bodla, that inasmuch as an ordinary person can put it together again, then the idol is not bottle, right? Because we said, you know, that if he breaks it, you know, purposely, then of course it's bottle. But this way, he can set it together again, then it's not bottle. It still is sacred to him. But Mar Sovar and the other authorities in agreement, the fields that Ein Avinis Chechovim Betela El Tegetu Asar, that the only way that you can nullify an idol is the way it's constructed. Da'ainu orche, in other words, the way it normally should be. Or lav gedulaso, but if it's not growing, that the idol is not put together according to the way it should be, then the Ein Shrich of the Batil, and you don't have to nullify it. So obviously there's a difference of opinion over here. To me, of course, the logical thing is that if it's Shivrei Shvorim, once you go beyond that, so that there's hardly anything left of it, I don't think that you're going to put, you know. Then I think for a moment the Catholic churches, in every church they're supposed to have a relic. You know what a relic is?
Yeah. Piece of cloth or piece of bone.
Oh, right, right, exactly, yeah. Right. In other words, if it's named after Saint Chaim, so it would be something that belonged to Chaim, maybe a chip of a bone or something like that. So this they venerate, you know, they recite prayers to it, and so on and so forth. So that being the case, even a little chip still has significance to them, you
and
see.
And yet we don't think of that as a lotus order.
We're being polite, okay.
What did you say?
I say we're being polite.
We're being polite.
Right. Because, look, we're living among Goyim. And so, therefore, we certainly don't want to antagonize them, particularly because their religion also has a basis in the Bible. I mean, they accept, to a certain extent, you know, our Bible as being holy, okay? So, that being the case, that's why we say that their religion is not idolatry. And in the case of Islam, too, I mean, they also, you know, they talk about Abraham and Moses and so on, you know, as being forerunners of their religion. So, that being the case. And of course, you know, they are definitely monotheistic, there's no question about that. So, that's why we say that it's also it's not a Vedasar. Right? On the other hand, Hinduism, something like that, I don't have to tell you, I mean, where you have all kinds of idols over there. So that's already a different story. That is idolatry, no question. Yeah. Pardon me? Buddhism, to a certain extent, also, right? Yeah. So is how many Jewish kids are running into me.
Well,
right, yeah, yeah. That's the Torah.
Buddhism,
how many Jewish kids? Right, right. Buddhism, Zen, Nech, Vesach, Nech. What's a Zen and Zen, Vesach, Nech? Okay, right. What?
It says in Tanya over there,
yeah, right, okay, of course. Right. All right, listen, we look forward to Yom Ha'u Yeh Hashem Echod Ishmei Echod, that all the nations, you know, will recognize our Ben Ishmael.
I think
We'll start the fourth chapter with the Mishnah and we'll call it a night. I seem to have run out of steam in my voice. Okay. So first of all, Adon Aloch Kol Aflamin. May we return someday again to learn this over again. Chapter Kol Aflamin, all the idols, etc. And now we continue with another type of an idol. That's why it's called Aveda Zori, you know, idolatry. Okay. This begins by saying Rabbi Yishmael Eimer, Rabbi Yishmael says, Sholesh Avonim Zu Bitzat Zu Markulis.
Oh,
Zu Bitzat Zu, right? Bitzat Markulis, the way I have to read it, right? You have three stones placed one next to each other, and they're placed next to a markulis, which I'll explain in 1 second. So he says, asuros, they are prohibited. Ushtayim, but if it's only two stones, it's permitted. V'chachamim meimrim, and the sages say, sheniros imay, if these stones seem to be associated closely with the markulis, then they are prohibited. But if they are not placed right near it, it's mutoris, they would be permitted. So now the question is, what is a markulis? The answer is that this is the reading that we have over here. Originally, it actually was mercurius. In other words, mercury. What about mercury? He was considered by the Romans as being, among other things, the god of business, the god of wayfarers. In other words, go on a trip, so you prayed to him in order to, you know, to have a safe journey. Understand? Right. And not only that, but when they had a crossroads, so they would erect a little statue or what symbolized the statue, namely that they would put a stone here, and then a stone on top. So it begins to look like an idol, you understand? And then very often we have like a signpost pointing this way or that way, whatever it may be. So what happened when a person came to such a crossroad and he saw the Makulas? So he served the Makulas by throwing a stone at it, okay? In other words, adding to it, so that eventually you would have a heap of stones that would be built up over there, okay? So this is the situation. So what Rabbi Yishmael is saying, well, if you see three stones, then you know that already the intention was what? To serve Makulas, okay? To serve Mercury. But if you only have two, then it shows that it's not yet an act of worship, and so therefore he says you can take those stones and use them for whatever purpose you want, okay? Whereas the Chachamim say if they are in the close vicinity, the stones are in the close vicinity, Neros, in other words, they appear right with it, understand? But not necessarily right, standing right next to it, which is what Rabbi Yishmael said, Bitzad, which means literally at the side of, okay? Then in that particular case, you could use the stones if they are not obviously associated with it. But if they are obviously associated with it, in that case you cannot use the stones, because obviously they were placed there as an act of Eda Zora. Okay, so yes. Tonight is the 6th of the month of September already, in the year 2006. We're in the month of Elul, getting closer and closer to Rosh Hashanah. And I'd like to continue, first of all, with the Rashi. Now, I have to say something about the Rashi at this point. Rashi is, of course, the one to the left of the text, okay? Rashi has already looked at the chapter beforehand, and so he has seen some of the possibilities that they discuss afterwards. And therefore, what he has to say over here is really based upon the discussion that comes further on. But we'll take a look at Rashi, because you'll get some idea of what they're talking about. All right, so Rabbi Yishmael, first of all, he says, Zu Bitzad Zu. Okay? And what did he say? He said, the culture came achas, right? In other words, we say that if there are only two, right? Then even if there's only one, or maybe what Rashi is telling us is a little different. Maybe what he's telling us is that if it's next to a statue of Mercury, then in that particular case, even one stone would also be prohibited, you understand? Instead of the three, which Rabbi Yishmael in the text of the Mishnah says are prohibited, but two are not. So, of course, we don't have to say if two would be permitted by Rabbi Yishmael, then certainly one stone would be. And yet, as we'll see, there's a great deal of hesitation about accepting that, as we study the Gemara text, okay? Anyway, it says, Bitzad Makulas, that's the next one, okay? Well, he says, the Kosh Kein Achas. Okay, the Kosh Kein Achas al Gav Shtayim. He says, if you see one stone on top of two stones, as I said, it made it like a triangle, right? So that already is like symbolic. The Zehu Ika Makulas. So he says, this is how they begin building up the Makulas, by putting two stones and then a third one on top. Alright, so this is what Rashi is saying so far. Then it says, these stones are Bitzad Makulas, right? So he says, Makulas Godol. This is a big Makulas. Why? Because later on the suggestion is going to be made that they would have side by side with a big Makulas, they would have a little Makulas. So that's why he says, Makulas Godol. right. Big Makula Shekevora, Vuduhu. He says, because this already had been worshipped as an idol. Bizarko Allah Abodim Harbe, they threw a lot of stones on it. So then, if that's the case, you see stones in the vicinity. And see, so he says, Shtayim Utoros, if there are only two, they are permitted. The Gemara before Shabbat. Gemara will explain why. So how about Shaniros Emo, that they appear to be together with it? He says, the Nira, it seems, the Shanotlu Mishan, that the stones that are loose, they fell from the idol. So if it seems that they fell from the idol, then in that case, obviously what? They are prohibited, right? Asuros, they're prohibited. And he says it makes no difference in that case whether it's Bein Gibel or Bein Shtayim. Of course, this is the view of the Chachamim to say that, right? Chachamim Eimer, Shein Nira Yisimo, Asuros, Shein Nira Yisimo, Mutoris. But Shein Nira Yisimo, Ein Smuchos Lo, but if the stones are not nearby, so Mutoris, Vafil Gimel, then even if there are three stones, no. So, we see already there's a difference of opinion between Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael is more interested in what? In what is the shape of the makulas. The Chachomim take it for granted that there is a makulas already, but the question is, if there are any loose stones, are they prohibited or not? If the loose stones seem to be right near the makulas, or even if they fell away from it, but they're still, you know, within the same vicinity of it, then in that case they say it's prohibited. But if it's already further away, then the chances are that it was not a stone that belonged to Makulas, and therefore that would be permissible. So this is how Rashi understands the Gemara text. So the Gemara text begins by saying, Bishlamo Rabbanan, he says, we can understand the position of the rabbis. Kosabre, because they are of the opinion that Oivdin Lishvorim. It seems that they worship those things that are broken away, right? So, and Nero's Imo. And they seem to be together yet with the Makulas. Alright, so let's understand first of all what they're trying to say over here. We had already in the previous chapter that if you have broken things, the question is, do the idolaters worship even fragments or not? Remember that one? Right. We discussed it. We gave the example of, for example, relics in the church where if they have a shtickle bone or something like that, they say, you know, that it's holy, you know. So, in other words, if we say that they do worship fragments, then in that particular case, then obviously they are prohibited because it still is a product of Avodah Zorah. But if we say that they don't worship fragments, that's what we had, you know, a couple of pages back, then in that particular case, we say that in that case, the Mutoris are permitted because. So, this is a similar situation over here. That the rabbis, apparently, in this particular point, feel that even though these stones are broken away by the looks of it, but if they are right near it, they appear with it, the Ika Lamema, so that we could say, Mine Dofal, that it fell from it, then in this case, it's Asuros, they're prohibited. Whereas, She'ein Niras Emo, if the stones are nowhere in the immediate vicinity, you don't see that they're in that vicinity, then the Makulas, then it means that they're permitted because obviously these did not come from the Makulas, but simply stones from the place, whatever it may be. El Rabbi Yishmael, but how about Rabbi Yishmael's reasoning? Michael Sava, what was he thinking? E over the Shvorin, if he also believes that what? That they worship even broken fragments of the Avodah Zarah, then I feel it tautei namilitza. But in that particular case, even tombstones would be prohibited. E ain ovdin nishmor. If they don't worship fragments, then I feel it's loss. Namiloi. Then, in that particular case, even if you have three, then in that particular case, that should not be prohibited. Whereas, what does the Mishnah quote him as saying? That if it's two, it's permitted, and if it's three, it's not. And yet, we argue, well, what exactly is this thought process over here? Because if they came from the idol, then even if there were only two, they're still prohibited, right? As we said a few moments ago. Whereas, if we say they did not come for the idol, so why three? Why should we say three are prohibited? So maybe that's not how he's reasoning. So over Rav Yitzchak by Yosef, over Rav Yochanan, said the name of Rav Yochanan, says, Biyodua, he says, where it is known, Shenashru Mimenu, that the stones fell from the idol, then Divrei HaKolasu is that everybody is of the opinion that what? That the stones are prohibited. Ba'afila Lamanda Omar, and even if you follow the opinion of the sage who says, Ein Oivdim Nishvorim, that they do not worship fragments, Hane Mila Avedis Kechovim, the love. Right. The love Haina Orche. This is the case then of idols where this is not the normal way of worshipping the idol. Avol Hacha. But here, in the case of the stones, the Miyakora, to the begin with, Taburi Mispare, they are broken to begin with, because, I mean, talking about whole stones, even fragments of stones, right? And I know, okay, this is the way you normally find it. So, keep Lige, when the argument is there, then it's Bistama, it's where we don't know specifically, did it come from the idol? Did it not come from the idol? And now we have to go on to the next page, the Daf Nun, Omid Aleph. So how can you tell? He says, "Bimakoravos," right? If they are right nearby, then Nami also the ikalamemo minenofal. You could say that it fell from it, right? So in that particular case, even you know where they're right close by to the idol, so you could say, where did these stones come from? They came from the idol. They fell from it. So Divrei HaKol, then everybody would be in agreement that Asuros, that they are prohibited. But keep Klige, so where then is the Machloikas between them? Where is the difference of opinion between them? The answer is Bimen Ruchokos, where the stones are at a distance from the idol. Before we said if they're at a distance, what? Huh? This is a garnish, right? But whose opinion is that? That's the Chachamim's opinion. Of course, it's that they're the ones who stress about Nirosimo or Eino Nirosimo, right? Either that they appear to be close by or not, right? Whereas, what was Rabbi Yishmael talking about? He was talking about essentially how many stones and how were they put together, you see. That's what he was talking about. So, even if they were at a distance from the idol, we could say that the machlokes, that the difference of opinion between Rabbi Yishmael and Chachamim is still there. So it says, "V'ha'ab etzad makulis katani." But the Mishnah stated specifically what? That it's right next to the Markulis. So they say, my Bitzad. So how do you define the word beside, at the side of? It reminds me of what is right. How do you define it? So the answer is, Bitzad Arba Amos today. If it's within four Amos, remember that's four cubits, and Amos is at least 18 inches. Some say it's 24 inches. I mean, it's between 18 and 24 inches, okay? So it's within that. Normally what we think of Arba Amos is approximately 6 feet, okay? In other words, if it's within 6 feet of the idol, then in that particular case, what do we have to assume? That it belongs to the idol, right? It's part of the idol, and therefore it should be prohibited, right? So, at any rate, Abrahamis, what did they write? So Rabbi Yishmael, so far Rabbi Yishmael took the opinion that what? Oysim Markulis Koton, Bitzad Markulis Godol, Sholosh, the Damian, the Markulis, in other words, he says, he took the opinion that they make a small statue of Mercury, you know, in other words, putting the stones together, besides the big one, right, which has three stones, consists of three stones that resemble the Markulis, and therefore, what about the little one? Is the little one, is it an idol, or is it not an idol? You understand? So, if according to Rabbi Yishmael, right, that if they are three stones that are shaped in the same form of a Markulis, then in that case, it's prohibited. But if it's Shtayim, if there's only two stones, then Mutore. So that's his opinion as it emerges now. Rabbanan Sabri? But the rabbis of the opinion that what? That they don't make a small Markulis next to a big Markulis. Makes no difference how many stones, whether it's three or two. That's not the important thing. But Neros Imai Asuros, if they are in the immediate vicinity of the idol, then what? They are prohibited, no matter how many stones, in other words. And Shein Neros Imai Mutoros, but if they're not in the immediate vicinity of the stones, then what? Then they're Mutoros, they're permitted, they're not prohibited.
Not counting how many.
Right. Chachavim are not counting. Right.
Really the distance from the big.
Right.
From the big,
right.
From the
Gadol. Right. And they don't hold that, you know, people put up a small Markulis. That's what the opinion is over here. Okay. So, Omar, certain authority said, Biodua Shenoshu Mimenu Dibriakol Asuras, right? We said that if it is known that the stones fell from it, then everybody is in agreement that what? That the stones are prohibited. Veraminu, but we have a contrary teaching which says, Avonim Shenoshu Min HaMarkulis, right? Those stones that fall from the Markulis, Neros Imo Asuros, if they are in the immediate vicinity, then they are prohibited. But she'en nirosimai mutoris, right? But if they are not in the immediate vicinity, they are permitted. For Rabbi Yishmael Omer, but Rabbi Yishmael is of the opinion that what? That sholesh asures and shtayim mutoris, that three stones are prohibited, whereas two stones are permitted.
He stays with that opinion.
Right.
He stays with the number.
Yes, even in the immediate vicinity. Unless we know specifically that it fell from there. because that's what he said. He said, if we know specifically that it happened, then in that case it's asuras. If we don't know, then what is the presumption? That's the point. What is the presumption in that case?
Can I ask one
sure,
question?
Sure, absolutely.
All of this has to do with stones.
Right.
And the question has to do with, can you take them and use them for something else?
Of course, exactly.
What would they be using the stones for?
We'll see in a moment if we get to it. They use it for pavements.
Oh, okay.
You have people who take stones and they make, a pathway, right? Right.
Well, they make fences out of
stones. Right. Yeah. The various things with stones. But specifically, the Gemara is going to mention using it for pavements.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so let's see. We'll have to keep it. Omar Rava, so Rava says, okay, that Lord Tamer Shadashu, don't say that the stones fell, but rather you should concentrate on Shenimtzu, that the stones were found right nearby, right? The Sova Rabbi Yishmael, and Rabbi Yishmael's with the opinion that Shadayim were Torahs, right? Now they question. And yet, does Rabbi Yishmael really think that if there are only two, it's permitted? The whole Tanya, then we learn someplace else that what? That Rabbi Yishmael Omer, Rabbi Yishmael says, Shadayim, Yitafiso, Lo, Asuros, Sholosh, Afilim, and Rechokers, Asuros. So, no concept that now we're bringing in. Tefisa. What is tefisa? Tefisa means within the grasp. So, what does it mean? So, according to this version now, Rabbi Yishmael is saying that if you have two stones, now remember, see, it's two this time, right? And he says, if it's within the area that the idol could grasp it, literally. In other words, very close by, right, an arm's within an arm's length. That's exactly what we're saying over here. Then, in that particular case, even two is prohibited. And then he says, Sholosh afil ruchokes asuris. This is already, yeah, but if you have three stones, even if they're far away, he's still insistent upon what? That the number three means it's prohibited. So this is a new interpretation of what Rabbi Yishmael was thinking. So Omar Rava says, Leikasha, that's not a contradiction between one statement of Rabbi Yishmael and another. He says, because Kan Bitfisa Achas, in one case we're talking about that it's within the grasp of just one. Kan Bitfisa Achas.